very hot, is on the podcast at long last. Barry and I have talked about doing this for quite some time, and he's here. And we are going to talk today, the master of ugly ads himself, the king of ugly ads in the world of meta advertising, Barry Hot. And of course, Barry actually is a super experienced advertiser, if you know Barry, across a whole lot of different stuff in the world of meta ads, but has carved out the ugly ads role for himself complete on this episode. If you're watching it with multiple stickers and a hat, all pointing towards, and a neon sign, all talking about ugly ads. So that's the thing we have to say, is that Barry Hot is the ugly ads guy. And that is the reason, that is the number one reason I brought him on today. We could talk about all kinds of stuff with meta ads, but I have been experimenting in a lot of ways with my clients with what can only be described as ugly ads, including the Post-it note ad.
Oh!
And I'm ready to talk with Barry about what I can be doing better, how to make my ads uglier and more effective at the same time. And so I am shamelessly stealing time from him by having him on my podcast to talk about great advertising on meta ads, using ugly ads, and we may get into some media buying stuff. Who knows? Who knows? As Barry and I talked about in the intro, there's a real good chance that we could talk for many, many hours about meta ads.
We have before.
Yeah. So, all right. So, okay. Barry is here. His resume is very long. The point is he's an experienced advertiser, and you should listen to what he has to say about these things. Let's talk to Barry Hot about how to make more money on meta ads. That's the point here.
Sick intro. Thank you, Mr.
You're Harris. So welcome, Barry. Welcome. Welcome to the show. The vibes are positive and high and jolly, I would say, right now.
Are they? Let me change that real quick, because Andrew, yeah. I want you to know, while we're recording, I want this to be on the record, I am such a big fan of yours. I wish I could say I'm your biggest fan. I can't say that, because I know you have more rabid fans. And that's like the biggest compliment I think I can pay you. I watch a lot of your content, and I consume, I think I consume every tweet you put out, and I'm a very big fan of what you say. And some of my favorite things that other people say about you, which I co-sign, is how fair and reasonable, and you listen to other people, and you, even when you disagree, and it's very pleasurable and enjoyable to argue or to battle with you.
Yeah.
Because you don't take it personally. You're not attacking. You're not being defensive. It's just a joy and it's a treat.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we're going to disagree about much on this today.
Know. No, today I sure hope we do. Today. We should have a disagreement pod in the future where we just go.
But I am a big fan of yours.
Thanks. And that's so nice of you to say. I'll let you know that. Yeah. Well, I don't even know. I remember maybe just through some Twitter stuff, you had come out to – it's really nice things you just said to me. Thank you very much. I did have somebody say to me recently something about like, well, what's it like to be like – have you thought about having like a more public presence? And I was like, bro, like I am not a big – like I have like – you are significantly overestimating how much people care about my stuff. So,
but you're a natural at this, man. You're really a natural at this. That intro is killer. Like, I mean, everything you do on this is like – you really do – crush at this. And what sucks perhaps is then that you have to deal with the maybe not fame, but like whatever of people admiring you from afar.
No, it's not. Fame is not. I mean, gosh, I feel ridiculous even bringing it up like that. I think what it is, the D2C is not that big. And that so you just, it's just not that big of a community. And so you could sort of
be
connected to quite a few people pretty fast. So, but anyway, what was I going to say to you, Barry? It was something about, when you came here, you were in LA and we didn't even really know each other, but it was like, hey, we've connected a little on Twitter. Let's go sit down.
I admired you.
It was a great time. I remember leaving, you and I were going to go take a nice walk down to the beach. I said, let's go look. It's a beautiful sunset. Well, it'll be romantic. It'll be wonderful. But I remember looking at my phone and being like, it's a half an hour past when I told my wife I would be home, and I have small children, and I still have to drive 20 minutes. I felt so bad afterwards. I like called her furiously in the car. I was like, we just got talking, and I don't know. So yeah, that was how it was. So
I'm so sorry about that, and I've not forgotten about that. And I think fondly of that. Like I want to.
Yeah, it was great.
I think back. I want to just. I mean, this is not great, maybe podcast material, but like seriously, like I now realize I'm trying to optimize more for getting to do more of that with people that I respect and care about and who are just smart experts. And I get so much energy from it and so much joy from it. So I'm trying to optimize for that. So like, even if this wasn't recording at all right now, like I just want to be with you, man. Like I just want to be here.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
you.
Yeah, well, so I now have two New York clients, so you know, so next time I'm out there, I'll definitely hit you.
No, I'll steal them from you. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it would save me some travel dollars for you if you ran their ad account instead of me. So that would be fine.
Let's do it.
Okay, listen, Barry, I feel embarrassed to say it, but the Post-it note works. It works, man. The Post-it note ad works. And there's a lot of other things to say about ugly ads. Mm-hmm. And I know that ugly ads are not just Post-it note ads. I know there's a lot more to it. But here's the main thing I want to start with today. I've been thinking a lot about creative strategy recently. Mm-hmm. And I am planting my flag on the long form explainer. I've recorded some content about the long form explainer. Yeah. As like one of so this is like one of the things that I think just like works and doing a great job on that works. I've got more content about that. And we can talk about that in a minute. But the other flag that I'm starting to put down, I'm not quite, and it's not really my flag, I think it's yours actually, is essentially the ugly ad. And there's a couple things that I really like about the ugly ad, okay? Mm-hmm. One of them is it's exceptionally cheap and fast to make, including with many iterations, which lends right into my media buying strategy, etc. So being able to do that at scale fast matters. And then secondly, I think you are right that ugly ads very often outperform non-ugly ads. Probably not all the time. Probably not for every brand, I think. But they just work. The concept of being socially native works. And what socially native amounts to will probably change over time. But the basic idea really can matter. And if you pair that cheap, easy to develop at scale with great messaging, boy, you can do very, very well for an extremely low cost. And in so, I am bringing you here to tell people not only to do this, but how to do it. So let me start with the Post-it note ad. And I think it's just like a great jumping off point. So talk about Post-it note ads. Go.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you don't even need me here. I'm just furniture at this point. You just like nailed all of it.
Here's where I'm really going. You're going to have a bunch of other ideas about types of ugly ads that I'm not thinking about. And so that's actually where I want to get to eventually. But right now, just talk about how you're thinking about that. I've come to call the Post-it note ad the text and context ad. The idea is the text is in the context of the image. And so that Post-it is one example, but you can do it with, I've used a letterboard and used all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Right. Yeah. Anything. Okay, right. Literally write it on your hand. You know, like you can just put it in the world. And especially if you can keep that relevant to what it is. Like if you're selling like beach blankets, put it in rocks in the sand, dude. Like that costs nothing to go do that and take a picture of it. Like,
have you done rocks in the sand?
No.
I've thought about this. Well, it's because I live in Southern California, so I've thought.
Yeah, I can get to the beach. I can get to the beach pretty easy. But
you're in New York. Yeah. So I mean, what else though? Talk about more. Like, what are the text and context ads that you see work? What are the keys to doing it? Just say something about that for people.
You got it. So. Really, I mean, the whole thing about ugly ads, and particularly this text in context thing, right? Post-it notes are just a gateway drug, right? It's just like an easy way to, like you said, it's cheap, it's easy, it's quick. You can just get an idea out and just get it done and do 20 of them. And then you're doing copy testing for basically $0. And, you know, the wild thing is no one does a good job. There's maybe like 1% of marketers or media buyers or whatever that like takes into account the cost of ad production into their cost per acquisition. Right. But like, that's basically zero people are doing that. No. And if you're doing that and you hear this, please tweet at me or DM me or something and let me know how you're doing it. Cause I'm sure you're not, but like that is a cost, right? We can't just spend endless amounts of money on creative, especially when, you know, a big swing can be really expensive and miss. So it makes tons of sense just to be making lots of stuff.
And Taylor Holliday used to call this cost to impact ratio, right? Like potential impact relative to the cost as a way of, as a way of sort of conceptualizing the ad thing. And I'll just tell you, like with what you're saying there, pairing that with, in my opinion, bid capped or cost capped or manually bid creative testing reduces the cost even further. It takes this giant thing. If you can make your ads really cheap and test them for really cheap, like, or, you know, man, it's just crazy. The impact can be, the cost can be very low. The impact can be very high.
I mean, I definitely agree. But going back to like Post-its, like what are some of their text overlay styles? Like look at like other, just look at what native ads exist. Like not ads. Don't look at ads. Native organic content. Go find content that is being consumed by your consumer. Go find content that is being consumed by millions of people, right? Like go and look at that really broad stuff that millions of people are liking and engaging. Find viral meme pages. Find whatever it is. The thing I recommend everyone do is if you have a brand you're working on or a problem you're working on, go make a new Instagram account, go make a new TikTok account about that thing and only consume content. That's and pursue smart. It and like it and engage with it from that interest. I have one, I look at for car stuff, like, and it's the ads I get, the organic content I get is all car related, right? So it's like, it's as if I'm a totally different person. And I look at what those people are consuming natively, organically, and I try and find what can I reproduce from that. So some of those are like, you know how like a tag, if you tag someone on an Instagram post and you like tap it and it shows up as like a little overlay with the thing or a product, you can build that into an ad, just that style. Like you don't have to actually make the tag. You can just do that in Photoshop or Figma or whatever. And then it looks native and you can do that on a organic looking type of picture and it will look and feel native. You can do text overlays. Like everyone hates this. I feel like so many marketers hate this, but like the most common like Instagram font, Instagram text overlay, like white background, black text. It works well as an ad when it's native font. Don't use your branded font. Don't use your branded colors. It works well for a bunch of reasons. The most important of which is that that is the font and color that it defaults to. And because of that, most people make content with that. And thusly, yep. A lot of people consume a lot of content that uses that. It also helps that it's high contrast, easy, high readability. So like those are all things in favor of making stuff that doesn't look immediately and feel immediately like an ad and does look and immediately feel like something that people might want to consume because people are not on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok to view your very pretty ads. Yeah. Even your biggest fans are not there for that. Those are the people that tolerate it more and like it more. But those people are not on Instagram to go and engage with your brand. They're okay with it. But like that's not what they're there for.
Yeah. So, okay, there's a lot of things I could say about that. So that second ad type you just mentioned, which is the, let's say, phone quality image of your product with the white background, black text caption overlay style. That is usually what's going on. Is the other kind of ad besides the text and context ad that I'll put in the ugly bucket that I am most invested in with my clients right now. And I'm starting to do this at real scale. And the thing is, there's a lot that I love about this concept as well. So those two things, we call them socially native stills. That's like the name for it. And sometimes socially native videos will do the same thing with simple motion, right? So it's like 5 seconds, somebody holds the product and kind of moves it around or whatever. And it's just got the overlay there as well. We haven't played with that quite as much yet, but then socially native stills. And a lot of times we're pulling those from review platforms and things like that, as long as we have licensing to do that. I think the rules on various review platforms are different, but you just pull actual images from customers, especially if you're not showing their face. They don't care if it's just the product. And you can just grab this, again, for free in this case, almost free. I mean, it costs you probably a few dollars. Right. But here's the thing I love about this too, is that I will say you should basically never create an ad. What you should create is 5 versions of an ad and launch them.
Oh, I saw you tweeted that today. You tweeted that today, and I loved that tweet deeply, and it did not get as many engagements as I thought it should.
Well, I just tweeted. Let's see. Maybe if you would amplify it with your massive Barry Ha reach, but if you're going to sit there and hoard all the likes for yourself,
I feel like you have more followers than I do.
I don't think so. Okay. Anyway, the point is, who cares?
I'm retweeting it right now. So
I was joking. You don't have to retweet it. Keep them to yourself. If they go to me, No, but this is true because then what it allows me to do, because at that point, I think the copy on the image makes a massive difference in the performance.
Huge.
And you can test that copy with variations so fast and so easily.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can try just like, and here's my method for doing this with the way you're saying. And I do the same thing with text and context ads. I always have one of them that I consider sort of the control. It's not truly a control. It's because it's not running a randomized control trial, but it's basically a control. Yeah. And the control is the most direct, simplest, clear line of copy I can think of about the ad. Like, I mean, we're talking about like, this product is great for this reason, like essentially something like that, you know? And so that's always one of them. That's always one of the ads.
Right.
And then I've got like four or five others. Sometimes I'm pulling actual review comments. Sometimes, like sometimes I'm like making stuff up or whatever. But basically, like that kind of idea. And then you just go launch all of them at once. And I find with those ads, they are rarely my highest spending ads in the ad account, but at least one or two of them consistently get some spend. And so there is some additive value to them. And also they get varying levels of spend. So if I launch six versions of it, one of them will get a good amount of spend. Another one will get a little bit of spend, and then four of them get nothing. Yeah. And so that's part of the reason to launch six versions, right? Is because if you only launched one of the four that got nothing, you didn't get anywhere, but it took four
free
extra
bets.
Minutes.
You get to place free bets. Like literally, why not?
Exactly.
The way I look at that is like, I'll have, I don't know if maybe call it a control, but like, I'm going to, whatever my like kind of thought is, I'm like, okay, how do I overdo this? How do I go harder into this way beyond? And then also, how do I like reel this back in? That way, if I get to see a winner, I get to see where it falls on that spectrum, you know, and like where I'm going there. By the way, you said like you'd want to use like the words like this is the best, whatever.
Yeah.
If you can use the word you as the first word instead of this, like find the way to make it about you. Like, I don't think I need to tell you that.
That's like, funny though. Okay. Yeah, no, disagree. Matters, let's go. Let's argue. Let's argue. Let's
first
argue right
word
now.
Matters.
No, you're let's wrong about this. Here's my agreement. Here's my position. Here's what I believe about this. I think that I actually don't really disagree that much about this. I don't think you is the problem, but I think more direct comment about the product feels more like it gets away from fake authenticity. Because I think the danger with ugly ads is that people sniff out that it's inauthentic really fast. And the most extreme version of this is the fake UGC. It's the I'm obsessed ad. The I'm obsessed fake UGC sucks. It doesn't work very well, I think. And I also feel gross about it. It probably did, but I feel also gross about running it because it feels like it's content I hate. I feel like I'm representing the brand in a crappy light. But the moment you change I'm obsessed in the UGC to this product is great, you can actually use the same kind of format pretty well and pretty effectively. It's just that like, as I've said, creator is another word for bad actor. So like when you say I'm obsessed, people can sniff it out. And so anyway, so it's fake authenticity that then actually works against the value prop. So I think you and I maybe don't work as well.
Yes.
But third person, it's great.
No,
works
I couldn't disagree more. Oh, okay, Andrew, we could spend an hour talking about this.
No, let's not. Spend 5 minutes. Tell me why you disagree.
Andrew, Mr. Farris, come on. Like, I or you language is the direct route in. When you use you language, which you have to be a little bit careful about on Facebook because you don't want to say like you have herpes because Facebook will shut you down. Don't do that.
So no herpes ads.
Definitely don't accuse someone or suggest that someone has an illness. Like anyone listening to this, I've studied Facebook's terms and policies. Like, I recommend anyone who's running Facebook ads get real intimate with that. It's very helpful. Don't say stuff like that. You'll get in a lot of trouble and you won't understand
why. I'm going to send you a Make Herpes Ads hat.
I will not wear it, but I will proudly keep it in my office. Yeah. Make Herpes Ads. Don't make herpes ads.
Yeah, okay.
But here's the thing about I'll stick with the herpes for a second. Like, if you said you have herpes ? Or like, do you have herpes? Like, you're going to get flagged. That's a problem.
Yeah.
But if you said, if you had someone in the ad saying, I have herpes, okay, that's not against the rules. Uh-huh. And anyone who's watching that, who has that problem, is now in the shoes of that person who said that, where if it's said as text on the screen, or if it's being said verbally, the viewer, the consumer, is putting themselves in the shoes of that. And they, if it's relevant to them, then it's relevant to them and it's important. If it's not relevant to them, then they're going to keep, then they're like, I don't care. Goodbye. So that I or you is potent. Absolutely potent. That's like classic copywriting.
It might work for stills better than videos to have the I, because you don't have the person doesn't have to ask or doesn't have to act. But I just think almost every ad I run with I gets crushed compared to the same content, the same messaging saying it or this. Now,
I have to say it would have to go look at the ads with you because like it has to be related to what's being talked about. You can't just say I and then it matter. Like, yeah. You can't just say you and then it works. It's not that. Like, you have.
So
to
I have a brand that sells gifts for travelers. Okay, gifts for travelers. And every time we've tried to run formats that say, you know, and we've tried all kinds of different versions of this. I love this for my travel obsessed friends or whatever it is. It gets crushed.
Because it's terrible. Like, no one cares about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it might just be bad. But the moment you just feature the product and then say, here's why it's great for travelers, it sells like crazy.
All right. Well, let's talk about that then, because I think
it's because people suck at acting. Everybody sucks at it. People can just tell right away, this is an ad, fake. I don't believe you. It sucks. This product sucks. Yeah. It's bad. Yeah.
But okay. So we're actually going to talk about the real nuance here, which is exciting.
Okay.
Because it's not about just simple language. It's actually a bigger thing. Like, first of all, there's too much that has to get unpacked for that to be said for the consumer of that ad to care. I love this thing that like blah, blah, that's too much, right? And that thing you're talking about also probably doesn't solve a problem. And I'm very sure I know what client you're talking about. I'm very sure I know this product. And I'm very sure it is something that is...
The Wander Club. I don't think it's...
Yeah, Wander Club. I didn't think so either. I just didn't want to say it because I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, it is a product that is visually interesting. Now, if you have a product that visually is interesting, the game changes a bit.
Yeah,
right?
That's interesting.
I got really annoyed. I'm gonna call out your call out Taylor. I love who I really like, Taylor Holiday.
Yeah.
I really like, but I also love disagreeing with in a different way.
It's the fifth grade American sport. It's disagreeing with Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He posted about like how Kalo? Was it the rings?
Kalo, right? Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. Like why they're like, what's it called? Ads like work so well. I'm Team Enzo in that. The product, like the DPA ads or whatever, like works so well. And I was like, they work so well because it was visually like unusual. Like it was something that was like people didn't know, like didn't understand what it was. And it immediately it was immediately unambiguous as to like where this goes, how you would use it and why, like, it was so simple.
Yeah.
And like,
but I think that's a copy. Maybe the thing that ties those two products together, because the copy that worked there, that was my first media buying job. That's how I learned media buying was doing media buying for Kalo in the days when you would exclude Instagram from your placements because it didn't perform. So like right after they launched the ad product. Right. And when we did that, the headline on those ads was silicone wedding rings. And I think to your point, that's kind of interesting. And
that
even
itself,
though it's like really straightforward, right?
Itself,
because it's like, what? Yeah. So now, it's not that interesting.
But it's also, you know what it means.
Yeah, like, right. It's clear.
It's one of those few things where in three words, you got me. Like, silicone's also an interesting word itself.
Yeah.
Right. Just to get attention. Silicone wedding rings. You've explained the entire thing in three words.
Yeah.
And if people are already reading that and starting to be like, wait, why would that exist? Oh, wait.
Right. It actually makes sense.
You know, like,
I think you're right. Well, so, but it ties together maybe the Wander Club and Kalo in that sense is that they are category creators of their own, you know, like, I mean, the Wander Club doesn't, I don't know that like, you know, travel tokens is
doesn't
necessarily
solve
a category or anything like that, but it's the introduction of that it's not like selling supplements where it's like, there's a million versions of this, or skincare. There's a million versions of this product. And now you have to talk about why yours is good and the other ones are bad or something like that. You can't just say like multivitamin, you know, it's like, so what, who cares? Like there's a million multivitamin, that game doesn't work that way. So what you're saying is interesting. Maybe then I'm with you here a little bit. Maybe if you're selling multivitamins, you actually want, I had a great experience with this multivitamin. Whereas
I specifically had this problem. You'd really want to talk about the problem that it solves, right? Or how you felt before.
Right.
That's what I would always start with. But with this, with Wander Club, like, it's really one of those things where
grab attention with the product.
Yeah, in the right setting too.
Yeah.
But like the product itself is kind of like it's a washer on a keyring type thing. Like,
not anymore. Maybe they overhauled it. It's a beautiful, beautiful new version. Yeah.
Oh, super. Sorry. I didn't mean to over.
No, it's fine.
But like effectively, whatever it is, you'd look at it, right? You'd see there are things that make sense to your brain, but also you've never seen before, but also have words or like relevant things on it. So you're like, it's just like triggered a lot of emotions and connections and things that all make sense simply, whereas a lot of other products don't simply make sense.
Okay, but I'm going to give you a different example. So let's go to apparel, because I have had massive success recently. My old theory of apparel is that every product is its own piece of creative. And what I mean is, like, if you literally have the same image, but 50 different products, it's all, but they're all framed the exact same way, they're going to perform wildly differently because a red version of the product versus a black version versus
and it's going to have nothing to do with price or, like, it's going to be so completely,
at least
so
not at the click level, right?
At least what sells best and is most, yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. But I have recently instead seen I've seen really excellent performance. But yeah, this doesn't work very well for my example, because at that point, if you're wearing it, so I've seen really excellent performance of some ads that are just talking all about just like product. Mm-hmm. And the way I've thought about this for apparel is you want the customer to try it on in the ad. So that's the goal I'm trying to do with my creative. I want them to have a sense that as they watch the ad, they are having, because the thing they can't do is go into a dressing room and try it on. So you have to get them as close to that experience as possible at the ad level by talking about anything about how it stretches, how it washes, how it fits, how it, whatever, you know, any of those kinds of things. And all the while, they're going to have a sense of whether they think it's cute or not, you know, or they think it's attractive. Because they're going to see that in the ad.
That's the thing to come back to, is like ambiguity. There's, in most apparel, there's very little ambiguity.
Yeah.
Like most apparel. It's just like, how does that look? Do I want it? Right. There's some differentiation in terms of like more premium things, more luxury things, or if you're like getting into something that has a specific feature or a benefit, right? Like there are some, but it's still often going to come down to what's going to make it work or not is, does that immediately register something I want visually?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's 90% of the battle.
So do you have product categories? Is there a master Ugly Ads document somewhere at Ugly Ads HQ that is like in a file somewhere? It's like, okay, in apparel, do this. In supplements, do this. In category creators, do this.
Up here. I need to like lay it all out, and like, I got to make my course, man. I got to like get that all out.
Well, see, this is actually why I want to talk to you, because I was thinking about this. I'm trying to build out more internal process around your range of products, around your range of clients, to think more directly about each one, about how you apply some of these principles uniquely to the categories. Because you're convincing me on some of these things a little bit, that like maybe my first person, my frustration with the first person is wrong. Maybe actually I need to rethink that. And it's about the category.
Yeah.
And so what I've tried to do is start to layer in some of these. And I, you know, the problem with that exercise is that you begin to find subcategories of categories, and like the web of possible categories gets endless really fast, you know. But maybe it's not. Maybe there's five categories or something like that that like most brands fall into, and you can basically have some best practices for each.
I don't think I have a lot of rules. Like when you, because like I don't think there's ever going to be a time where I'm like, oh, I or you statements only work or only don't work. Like I would never. I'd have to try it 50 different ways or hundreds of different ways before I really rule something out, which is why I've ruled out like most pretty ads, because they've just lost so many times. But like, you know, something more nuanced like that, like when there's so many variables about it, I'm constantly, I'm not saying you don't do this as well, but I'm constantly back testing against my own hypothesis. Like, okay, like I don't think this works, you know, usually, but I'm going to try this again just because I can throw in this version. And like, it's often, it's like, you know, you said this, but the thing that really pisses me off is when people start with the word we, and when they're talking about we as the company, if they talk about we as like we as humans or we men who wear hats, right? Like that's okay. But if we're talking about we the company, nobody cares to read anything about what the company has to say.
Yeah.
We make the finest, you know, suitcases. Who cares? No one write it in a more personal way, a more relevant way. So I don't know. Like that's the thing I get annoyed about with you, Andrew, is when you say like, I don't think the I or you thing is like, right. I'm like, I think it's just like, you're like window of it.
That's all I'm looking for. All I'm looking for is rules, because what I want is repeatable principles.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I want those. And it's not just to make my job easy. It's because if you go into every brand, this is actually one of the problems people have. If you go into every brand with a blank page and you stare at the blank page for where to start, there are too many possibilities. And so I recognize that for media buying stuff, I tend to think I'm pretty close to always right in terms of the best practices. Not that every position of mine is right, but just that like the best practices are right in most cases. I really reject the notion that like there's multiple ways it's going to cat. I recognize that that's probably true to some degree on the edges, but I think most people should do it my way. That's what I think. The vast, vast majority.
And I feel like most people should do it my way, which is slightly different than yours. But the important thing I think we would both agree on is whatever nuances there are between what you do and what I do, it doesn't fucking matter. Just be consistent and be thoughtful.
No, I don't
And then you're
that.
Fine.
I don't think that's true. I think that there are ways in which my way is either better or worse than your ways. And it's not that I'm necessarily certain that I'm right. It's that right now, nobody's convinced me that I'm not right about those, about anywhere where you and I would have a disagreement. And so I would need to be moved on the position. And I think some ways are actually better than others. But with creative, with what you're saying, it's more reasonable to me that there would be like, actually the first person can work really well for some brands and you're just doing it wrong or something like that. Like it's a little less... Yeah. It's a little less fixed. But that said, I want to eliminate the blank page. And this is part of what I'm trying to do. Like I have talked about creative buckets before or something like this. I want to make it so that when I sit down to work on a brand or when my team does, we have a few things where we're going to say, we're actually not even going to go down that road. And that road may be useful, but at least until we go down the road that we think is going to work the best the most often and get really good at doing that. And then once we have dialed that in our and have repeatable process around those possible things, then we will allocate some additional time and budget towards exploring new frontiers. And so like the idea would be like, and maybe the way I think about this is like 80% of your time and budget is built on scaling up repeatable process around core principles that work. And then you've got a little bit of extra stuff on the side where you're tapping resources that you wouldn't normally tap. You go to a different kind of creator who you think is interesting. You go to an advertiser, you reach out to Fire Team and say like, hey, we want you to make some, you know, something that's just outside of whatever you're normally doing and saying like, we want some additional brains that are going to be think differently than us specifically because we know creative diversity matters and because I don't have all the ideas. So that's the way I think about it. So for principles here, I'm trying to think like, okay, apparel, what is mostly true in most cases that will mostly work in apparel. And, you know, and so this is why to bring it all back around, I brought you on today because I thought ugly ads work. And there's some things where the cost to impact ratio works. That's a principle that we can is replicable and you can test them at scale. And so how do we do a great job scaling up ugly ads as one of the buckets that we pursue?
Well,
say anything you want.
I want to hear more of your rules. Honestly, like I really just want to hear more of what some of where your rules are so I can pick them apart. Cause like I might have rules, right. But like, they're going to be broader. Like my rules are like, make people feel something. Like that's my rule. Like that's my rule.
Okay, that, let's go there. Let's do that. That's a good one. Stop there for a second. Make people feel something.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
In the first moment, I mean frame, five frames, you know, second. If I'm not making someone feel something, I've failed. You've failed.
So are you trying to make them feel anything
list of things? There's a lot of things I want people to feel. Curiosity is a big one. Discomfort, broadly. Like if I can make someone insecure really fast, I hate that. I say that and I hate doing that. Like I don't feel good about that.
Yeah.
But it works. Like if I can, that's a route that I'm looking for.
Maybe they should feel insecure.
I work with AdCrate works with Tushy bidets.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want every American to feel insecure about not having a bidet, in particular, not having a Tushy bidet, but in not having a bidet.
Yeah.
Like, and there are so many ways I can make you or anyone listening feel insecure about not having a bidet. Like that's one of my favorite things I get to work on because there so much of that is novel to the audience. All of these insecurities and all of these like feelings I can make someone feel and then immediately be like, whoa, I need a bidet. Or I should have a bidet. I love that. So like it's, you know, it's about making, you know, I can dig into the examples of that.
Do you have any methods or... You know, formula is probably too strong of a word, but anything that you think of as like, I know that if I want to make somebody feel something, this is the route, this is the basic structure of the message.
Yeah. So that's why I go back to the I or you statements because I know I can already make something that's relatable and it has to be authentic. To your point before, like, if you have people saying I statements and they're inauthentic or they're not relevant, relatable, or making someone feel something, then they're useless. Like they're worse than anything, honestly, to your point. Like, those are just terrible. So some of the things, like, what, first of all, ChatGPT, just put that in there and say pain points. Like, here's the product I'm advertising. What are the pain points? Right. What are the common pain points? What are the, in order of, you know, most common pain to the least. And like, you get 10, and you know, that is way easier than doing like market research, you know, and calling customers or whatever. It's so accurate and useful. And usually it comes up with 2-3 things that I wouldn't have thought of or known, because I'm not in everyone's heads. And I'll start going on that. And you can also say to ChatGPT, like, okay, what are some statements that you could make about that in an ad, or maybe not even an ad. And then what I really do, I'll go in the reviews for the product and I'll upload them to ChatGPT. I used to just do this in a spreadsheet and just search, but I'll upload it to ChatGPT and say, find me past tense I statements. Because those are where you're finding people that talked about, I had this problem. I was this. I couldn't do this, right? Relatable problems that were then, as soon as you start reading that or hearing that, your brain, the consumer's brain, starts solving it and assuming that whatever they're watching is solved by this product, right? This ad solves whatever that problem is. And they're about to find out what that is. They're already being
primed for it. How often do you do that?
A lot.
For a client. Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. That's a great example of what I'm talking about. Like, that's like a repeatable process where you're using a couple of things, a couple of tools to come up with a way of replicating this for a brand. Right. Yeah. That makes a ton of sense.
I don't have them necessarily written as rules like Ad Create. So I advise Ad Create. I own a piece of Ad Create. Like they have that written out nicely better than I do. But like a lot of these are just native to me. Like, they're just in my head.
I've talked in this episode about the notion of cost to impact ratio. And that is the very simple idea that you should take asymmetric bets in your business. Bets where you pay very low cost and you have massive upside. I believe that is one of the core reasons you ought to be considering staffing your business in the Philippines with my friends at More Staffing as your guide to recruiting, training, onboarding, coaching, incredible e-commerce talent in the Philippines. More Staffing has done this a bunch. They've done it for a bunch of folks who have listened to my show. I have yet to hear, I mean this, I'm yet to hear a bad word about the experience somebody's had with More Staffing from people who have been listening to my ad reads, watching my ad reads about More Staffing on this show for a while. And there are a lot of them and who've worked with them. It has consistently been great feedback. I use them for my own business, and it is because of cost to impact ratio. You can find incredible talent in the Philippines to staff up all kinds of parts of your e-commerce business. Like, I'm talking marketing, supply chain, inventory planning, all kinds of stuff, customer service, whatever your needs are. And as you find that talent, you pay them a premium price in the Philippines, but that is still lower than you would pay that same talent in the US, which means you attract incredible talent, people with deep resumes, high integrity, hardworking, really talented folks into your e-commerce business from the Philippines. And yet you do that at a lower cost than it would be to do the same thing in the US, which saves you money. It is a win-win. Go explore it. If you are expanding any part of your team in your business, I really don't know why you wouldn't consider working with More Staffing to do it. They will be very, very helpful to you, and they even have a one-year guarantee. They even have a one-year guarantee. So if the employee they place in your business doesn't work out for a full year, they will help you replace them at no additional charge. morenow.co. Go to morenow.co. Tell them I sent you. Go to morenow.co to work with More Staffing and staff up your business in the Philippines today. Do you have a team? Like, what? Like, do you have a team?
I have one person on my team. AdCrate has a large team. Yeah. I have one employee.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I don't have a big team. And part of the reason for that is that I don't have, I think one possibility that I ever try to like grow AJF growth as a real agency is that I am able to generate some of these things, these ideas into documented processes. And that would make it at least a little bit easier for people. Now, at the end of the day, you're going to have to have a talented person at the end of the day, right? But to have some core principles.
I could talk to you about this for hours. Because right, you can't scale yourself and you're an expert and you're skilled and you're talented. And there's only so much that you can train to someone else to execute at your level or even close to your level. And then the more you grow, the less it all gets, you lose all that quality. No matter how good you are at training or process or documentation.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched people go every which way, like grow too fast, grow slow, all those kinds of things, yeah. and seen this go a lot of different ways. But I think you're right. I think there's just like a question of like how much of this is process versus just like well-developed instincts after doing it for a long time.
Right.
And I think it has to be more process than people think, but probably also not enough to make a person who doesn't get it into a person who gets it. Like, I don't think you can solve eventually. And I think experience will matter.
Yeah. The instinct thing is such a great point. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, how like there are certain things about like metrics, Facebook metrics, that I just don't care about. But like the only reason I can say that I don't care about them is because I spent so much time studying them and paying attention to them and understanding the trends of them that I'm just like, okay, yeah, I don't need to look at that. I don't need to answer this question. I don't. Where someone with less experience, sorry, no offense to everyone with less experience, like that, they have to look at that to better.
There's no reason to be offended about experience, though, right? It's like that's the point. Is like you build up intellectual capital with experience, and that's why it's irreplaceable in a lot of cases. You know, this is why actually people are not paying you or probably me for per widget that we put out. What people are paying somebody is for their brain. And for for the experiential capital they've built up over time.
Well, what they're really paying for is their expectation of it.
Yeah.
Right? What they're sold on. But like, I mean, I have done 20,000 hours.
Right.
That's insane. And like, I didn't realize that how valuable that was until I started going out on my own and people being... Anyway, this
does answer some of the thing of like why, you know, people will say to me, well, like, come on, there's multiple ways to do it, Andrew. Why is your way right? And my answer is it's because there are better and worse ways to do it. And yet there are also multiple ways to succeed. And what I mean is no one of these things is the only important component of success. So let's just pull a number out. Let's say 20% of the success of an ad account is media buying. Then that 20% and let's
in 2024.
I don't know. I don't think that. I just pulled the number out of thin air. Like, I don't really have an opinion about
it. I just want to challenge you on something interesting. I want to pitch you something. I would say 80% of a failing ad account is because of bad media buying. But like,
that's super,
I would say that a good ad account is like 5% media buying.
That's an interesting way of framing it. Okay, so give me a round of 20% and say, we'll just add all those together to 20%. Okay, great. So 20%. So let's say that means out of 100 ad success points to get, there are 20 available in media buying. Okay, let's put it like that. And what I think is you could get 80 points correct on the other 80 points out of the 100 available points for good media, for a good meta ads account, and therefore be a really successful advertiser. And you could get a 5 out of 20 on media buying, and that's still an 85. And so you end up being successful, even though what I think is, my media buying principles would get you closer to 20 on that. Now you could run the Andrew Ferris media buying playbook, bid caps and CBOs and all the things I talk about, right? And get a 30 on all the rest of the stuff or a 20 and therefore still not be very successful. And because your total thing. And that I think is the way to think about how there are multiple paths to success, but that you can also still be right and wrong within one of those lanes. And that's kind of the way I would conceptualize that kind of concept.
So I don't think I disagree with any of that. Unfortunately, for anyone listening, it's probably
come boring. On, Barry, yell at
like,
me.
Yeah, I know, right? No, like, you know, I generally like a lot of what you're saying. I do have some issues with your media buying setup, like, but we can talk about that maybe later.
Future podcast. I have another ugly ads question for you. Finish this out, though.
All right, I kind of agree with you, but I think there's like a weird curve to it regarding scale. I think that at smaller scale, very small scale, your media buying structure is basically irrelevant unless you're doing something. I don't even know what you could be doing that would be so horrible that would get in actively in your way from scaling good ads and good pages and good product. Yeah. But as you get bigger and spend more and the system starts to optimize differently and be able to like kind of lean further away, that's what I see happen. It's a curve. And the bigger you get, the more you spend, the more traffic sources you have and the more a quantity of traffic you have from different traffic sources, right? Depending on also how much existing intent there is for your product or category, all of this to me greatly impacts how much the media buying can screw you or save you. So it's not, I don't see it as that linear, like 80-20. I see it as like,
those percentages could change at different times. Yeah. I don't have an opinion about how much of success media buying is 20%.
Maybe sure. Yeah.
I don't know. No, I don't, I'd have to think about it a little more.
That
I
doesn't come matter. Up
with an opinion. I see your matter. Point.
And I think I would say that what I know of your media buying style, like I wouldn't, and I haven't, and I wouldn't blatantly crap on. Like, it's not, like, it's fundamentally great. Like, even though I disagree with some bits of it, like, fundamentally, it most people should follow it.
But I'm probably getting 15 out of 20 of those points, and maybe you disagree with me about a couple of them, is kind of what you're saying, you know? Maybe I could get to 18 if I use the Barry Hot method.
I think there's other elements, like, there's other nuance in terms of targeting and exclusions, blah, blah, blah. And it also really depends on existing intent.
I can't say what it is right now, but Dave Recook suggested something to me interesting that is real spicy, and I'm definitely going to test it and then claim it as my own if it works. I'm not really going to do that. I'm going to give Dave credit. I actually don't even remember all the details of it. I have to look at it, but it's a redeeming view through conversions. That's really the point. Okay. So, but listen, we have so little time
because
I have
to pick up targeting existing customers.
Nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with that. I have a 4-year-old to go pick up from school in a little bit, but I want to ask you one more question.
Okay.
The question is, what kinds of ugly ads am I not thinking of? We've talked about text and context. We've talked about socially native stills, the notion of caption overlay on a still, and maybe a socially native video as well, like a caption overlay on a video. Yeah. Is there anything else that is in the Barry Hot ugly ad toolbox that I should know about?
My favorite tool is your favorite tool, dude.
Long form explainer.
I didn't know. Long form explainer. Just like the thing I'm thinking about making is like a 1-hour mini course just to do that the way I do it. There are, I have made so many scalable, long-term, high-performance ads, just me talking, because I have this like framework in my head that I just do and use and go and shoot, and it works because I'm speaking authentically. I'm talking about it. I'm not using flawless, like, look at the difference, by the way, in the lighting between this and this.
Yeah.
Like, huge difference, right? Like in terms of like what's authentic, what's different, like is it relevant to like what the set, like just being thoughtful about all those things and speaking and editing authentically and not, you know, like one of the things I often don't do in my ads, my talking ads, is use music because I don't need to. And it's often a trigger because you're either going to use copyrighted music and get yourself in trouble, or you're going to use non-copyrighted music and immediately sound like you're in an ad.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, long form explainer. And I actually do think that I think that uglier might be better on those. I'm a little more mixed on that. You're certain. You're certain.
I am very, very strong.
I just haven't tried it both ways. So I'll take your word for it. Like, I don't have a very strong opinion about that. But I do think the core driver is the messaging in that ad. I think that
that's beautifully said.
Yeah, yes. That I think is the most important thing, but that you probably, anyway. Okay, what about anything else?
I would have to say, by the way, the authenticity is really what matters, right?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of that. And if you can have someone who can speak with authenticity and speak with authority, it's so hard to falsify that.
Yeah, but everybody, it's so easy to fixate on the style. This is my concern about the idea of ugly ads, actually. It's so easy to focus on. People will talk about the style, the type of content, the format, all those things, instead of talking about the content, like the thing the person is saying and the organization of the message. And that's like always the thing I want to say is like, I've run a lot of ugly ads that don't work and they wouldn't work if they were pretty either. And it's because the message is bad. And that's the real giant difference. And so helping people hone in on how to message well, which is why the conversation we just had about INU and whatever is really interesting.
Yeah.
But okay, what about last thing? What about anything else that you think of as like go-to styles, formats? I just said we shouldn't do style format so much, but what, you know, just to give people a starting place for like,
Can I plug something? Can I plug something?
Please do. I was going to ask you to after this question anyway.
Yeah. So. Well, to answer that question, I wanted to say this, like one of the first things, like I worked with Creative OS to make a pack of ugly ads. Like, you don't need to ask me. You
can go to Creative OS. Yes, go get it.
And like,
link is in the show notes. 50
templates. 50 templates.
I actually didn't know you did that.
My favorite ugly ad templates. And like, there's other templates from other creators. And like, you can just,
I literally had no idea you were doing that.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah,
oh man, I got to tweet about it more, I guess. I might tweet about that after this now that you mentioned that. Like, but like, Yeah, and just a fair note, I make some money from that, a very small amount of money, but because I don't, you know, like,
whatever. You should. You put it together. You should make some money from that.
Yeah, yeah. But like, there's a Pubity style ad or Pubity, whatever it is, the viral page. It's very common. Like, if you can make ads, this is an interesting ugly ad, right? I'm not saying to make an ugly ad to make it uglier. I'm saying make an ad that isn't what your brand would do, right? And in this case, make it look like this viral page. There's some, you know, like, go look at what these viral pages do. And a lot of them have common formats, which is like white bar on the top, black text, or it's the image with a little circle image of like a highlight feature of it in it, and then text on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And like, if you can make that look and feel like those organic piece of content, then you know, going back to your point before, like, the style does matter.
Sure.
Because you're making it in a way that people expect to see that content on that platform. Yeah. But that fails completely if the content is useless and worthless.
Yeah, that's right.
And irrelevant.
That's right. Yeah.
So you need both, in my very strong opinion.
Okay, go get that. Creative OS. I'm going to do that. I literally didn't know it existed. I'm going to get it from you immediately. It is in the show notes, so you can get that there.
Sweet.
Don't go share it for free with somebody. Just pay the little bit of money. Barry took the time to put it together for you. Make sure he gets some money from that.
It's like, I think it's $150. It pays for itself. Like,
yeah.
Immediately.
That's so useful. I'm going to do that. I'm going to pay for it. So great. Yeah. Okay.
You're going to pay for it for everyone?
No, I'm not going to do that. Barry, people should follow you on Twitter.
Yes.
The link is in the show notes for that as well. Anything else that people should do to follow up with you?
Check out, just Google Barry Hot. I'm wherever you are, probably. I have a newsletter.
Don't Google Barry Hot. Newsletter. Great.
I have a newsletter. Okay, HaveAClues. Yeah, HaveAClues.com, which you can find through whatever. My newsletter, my new selling point for it is I don't send it a lot. So if you hate newsletters, have I got a newsletter for you? Because I typically don't really send it out a lot. Yeah. I just send it when I have something like that's spicy and really well thought out and bigger than a tweet and bigger than so I've been sending some banger stuff in there, and you can access all of it. It's on my website on HaveAClues.com.
Okay. Website is where to go get all those things. Creative OS is in the show notes. If this conversation interests you, thank you, Barry. This was great. This was great. Thank you for being great.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having such a great show. I really love it.
All right, huge thanks to Barry. I enjoyed that conversation so much. I hope you did too. Lots of stuff you can grab onto there. Do check the show notes for all of the links to all the things that Barry is doing to get more information from him and to use ugly ads in your ads. Also, more staffing. Don't forget to go sign up to work with more staffing to get all of the staffing needs that you have done in the Philippines. Virtual assistants can be helpful. Virtual professionals can change your business. Go work with more staffing, morenow.co. Also, link in the show notes there. And of course, follow up with me, podcast@ajfgrowth.com, @AndrewJFerris on Twitter, and @ajfgrowth.com for everything that I am doing all the time. In a few weeks, I'm going to have my next Opening the Books episode. Really, really good. I've already recorded it. It is very, very helpful, I think, again, in a brand that is a younger brand that is up and coming, has hit success after finding some creative that works, switching their account to bid caps, now building out their supply chain, inventory planning, all kinds of stuff. So some stuff you've heard me talk a lot about, some stuff that I haven't talked as much about, and hopefully it will be really, really helpful as well. I think it's a really good episode. Don't forget to subscribe and keep an eye out for that episode of Opening the Books, the third one of those that I'm doing. If you missed my episode with Eric Van Holtz and Mike Lawson from Beard Brand, go back, check that out. I've gotten really good feedback about that. I hope it is helpful to you. And again, if you want to do an Opening the Books episode with me where I coach you for free and you just share the information with people, don't forget to reach out to me, podcast@ajfgrowth.com. I'd love to do that with you. All right. Until next time, see you later. Thanks for listening. And I'll break it all. I know the script with my